Hey, boys and girls, it's time for another Kenya podcast from Living Faith. Luke Tim here. This is my interview with Emily Mickelson. Emily's a 20-something college student. This is her first trip to Kenya, and was it a doozy? A little bit hard on her. She actually got ill on the way. So part of it was travel, maybe a little bit of nerves, but definitely had a thing. And fortunately, was able to get past that pretty quickly, pretty early in the trip. So by the time we were hitting the real meat of the trip, she was doing much better. But she talks about how it's hard to adjust, hard to get back into the swing of things back here, and a great testimony, too, of this gets people motivated to start serving and making a difference here as well, and how important that is to her and to our congregation to start serving and doing those sorts of things here in our own backyard. So just another great testimony to see how this changes lives and how it is actually an investment in local ministry and mission as much as anything else. So without further ado, here is Emily Mickelson. They are at a birthday party for a one-year-old. So, you're out there, he's going to a friend's house. And I'm just goofing off. I never get to goof off. It's nice. So way back when you were confirmed, you were all, you knew then that someday you'd be in Kenya.
No.
Come on.
I was probably like just trying to pass high school, trying to make it through there.
Get in, survive freshman year.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
But I think, like, youth gatherings was about the extent of my, like, going outside of church and, like,
yeah,
that was about it. And definitely would not have pictured myself doing that back when I was confirmed.
Right. But, I mean, your family's always been just crazy involved around here. I mean, that's not out of the ordinary for the Mickelson family to be around Living Faith.
Yeah. We've been here since it opened, or like a little bit after, because we were from Shepherd of the Valley.
I think your parents are original, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, there's a handful left. There's maybe six families left that are original.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I love it. And I love the fact that those original families, we still have a couple on council, a couple on elders. So they're still in leadership positions. It's not like they got here and go, oh, the new people take care of everything.
Yeah.
So it's a good mix.
Mm-hmm.
So when did you first feel the nudge like, oh, I should go to Kenya. That should be a thing I do.
It was probably like around the time you guys went last year or no, I think it was my senior year, because I think my senior year, it didn't work out time-wise, because I think it was right around graduation time.
Yeah.
Because I think you guys went in May. So I think that was kind of the start of it, and it just didn't work out that year, and then kind of just, like, kept thinking about it and kept, like, missions just kind of kept popping up, and I was like, man, I really want to do something, but it was just, I never really felt like I had a direction of what to do. It was just kind of, I know I want to do something, but I think then when, I think probably like when it came back up that you guys were planning this next one, I was like, okay, it's like perfect timing. Like I can go, I have like the availability. And like, I think there's a reason it's perfect timing and like, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, you seemed excited to go, but nervous still. Like, you were pretty worried right up till takeoff.
Yeah.
And maybe somewhat afterwards. Yeah.
I think it, like, I'm like, I like my bubble, and I'm not really outside my bubble. And then, like, you get, like, basically just taken out and plopped in, like, Africa. And, like, that is definitely outside my comfort zone, but I think I knew that I would regret it if I didn't try.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, don't have any regrets about it. So
What was the thing you were most nervous about before you got there? Like before you got on the plane, that was you're most scared about something.
I would say not having the right words. Because that, I mean, even like, I would say most of the trip, like, I was like, don't call on me. I don't want to talk. But yeah, and just like messing something up and not having the words that they needed to hear. Yeah. Because I was like, I want to go over there and help, but I don't want to ruin something. I don't want to say something wrong. And yeah.
And
that was probably the most nerve-wracking thing.
So one of the most common fears people have is that they'll actually be a detriment to the trip. Like, I'm going to...
Yeah.
I've heard that in these interviews, too. People say, you know, I didn't want to get there and all of a sudden get sick or have something happen. Everybody has to take care of me. And
yeah.
But that's no big deal.
Yeah. Being sick was not fun.
Yeah, you were hurting there for a while.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it didn't get bad. I mean, whenever I see the beginnings, I'm like, oh, how deep does this go? Is this going to end up with, you know, head between the knees, vomiting for the next 12 hours?
Yeah. And
hook up an IV, dehydration, medical evac.
Yeah. There was a way. I was like, I don't want to stand up. I don't want to walk around. I don't want to pass.
Yeah.
So it's like, can't hold any water down. But I don't know how it happened that, like, right before we got in that car ride was, like, the last time I got sick. And then it was fine.
Which is bizarre because the car ride was the hardest part.
Yeah.
That's not, so everybody listening, that's not like the car ride from the airport to the hotel. This is the car ride from Turkana all the way up to Kakuma, and that's a 3-hour, something like that, 3.5-hour drive, and of just the worst kind of driving. Jeez. And that part, you didn't get sick on.
No, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It would have added an awesome component to the story if Emily puked in the vehicle while we were driving.
Keith was like plotting every time I got sick. He has it probably on a map.
Of course he does. That makes complete sense.
So if you ever cared to know where it happened.
Oh, good old Tony Stark with us, with all his gadgets. Yeah. Yeah, that was a very big deal. And what do you think that sickness was that nerves or was that like a physiological, you definitely had something?
I definitely had something because I think I felt fine right until the end of that Amsterdam flight when we like just dropped and it was like fast, but it was enough where I was like, that did not make me feel good. And then it just like kept going. And but yeah, then I mean, I don't think it was nerves because I think that would have continued on. But, I definitely think it was that the plane ride and
yeah, that was my guess too. Because usually with nerves, you see like these peaks and valleys, and there was like a little bit of a peak, but then there was just this like grind of oof, Emily does not look good.
Yeah,
like you lost all color. It was like I didn't think there could be any whiter in Africa. I was wrong.
Yeah. I have not gotten sick like that forever. Like, oh.
Yeah.
Don't want that again.
Yeah. That was fortunate that you rallied out of that. Because once you get into that like cycle of dehydration, it's so hard to get out of it. And it just can ruin a few days.
Yeah.
But you were good to go first day out in the field, right?
Yeah.
How was that first day?
It was good. I think, because I guess kind of at our first day, like, at the church and the first day, like, out and about doing stuff. And I feel like everything's kind of a blur right now. Still, like, kind of all just, it went by way too fast. So, like, kind of just goes together. But I would say, I mean, it was still, like, nerve-wracking those first couple of days. Like, back to the whole, like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say. I'm going to mess something up. But it was... Like, that was such a cool experience to be able to be in their church. And, like, a lot of times I couldn't understand what they were saying, but you could still kind of follow the path of, like, the service and, like, know, like, what's going on. Even though you couldn't understand, like, language-wise what was going on, you could still kind of feel the same, like, rhythms. And so that was neat to see. And, like, just their singing and, oh, my gosh, just their excitement.
Yeah.
I was there. That was amazing.
Yeah, that energy and vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I fall in love with the singing. I fall in love with that sound. You can't recreate it.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be there.
Yeah. That was, I mean, just from like the moment we stepped out of the car and they were in front of the church singing, and and that was kind of the way it was every day. Just like, it's like, wow.
I love that. That first experience of when you're welcomed by song, and that that's pretty common. I've had that a dozen plus times where you get out of a vehicle and people see that you're there and the vehicles are there and they just, I mean, they're scuttling together and they get in this big group and the song breaks out and there's clapping and it's just kind of this spontaneous. And then you realize they're singing because I got here.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, nobody has ever sung my arrival for anything.
Yeah.
Just cool. Like, I always imagine it's kind of like having that background music when you're a star in a movie and you walk in a room and music starts. And you're like, sweet. Yeah. I'm important. Yeah, what was the favorite part of the trip for you? What was the biggest deal?
I think that service was a big deal. I think just seeing the way that they lead their service, and there's just so much joy and, like, happiness in those services. And, like, I mean, you see that here sometimes, but it's just kind of like everyone, I feel like everyone's just kind of on their timer where it's like, okay, you have an hour for church, and then I get on with my day. And, like, church is a big part of their day, and they just, like, they're not on this timer of, like, we have to be done at a certain time. It's just, like, as long as we feel like we need to, like, praise God. And
yeah,
I don't know, that was just amazing to me. And then we just got to spend the rest of the day like in fellowship with them, and meeting everyone and talking to everyone. And that was, I just loved that time together.
Yeah. Well, you were a diligent student. You did all the reading, and I remember you were like, I read that stuff and I just can't believe that that's how the culture works. And then, but you, one of the things you experienced, or you just said, was that that difference between being on a time-based culture and an event-based culture, and it feels different.
Yeah.
I mean, start and stop time is out the window.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we start, you know, when we do, because that's when people are here.
Yeah.
And then we're done when we're finished.
Yeah. Kind of took until the end of the week to, like, catch on to that, because at the beginning you're still like, okay, it's, like, time to go. Like, we have places to be. And then, yeah, by then you're like, oh, whatever. We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah.
I don't care.
It took Keith and Jason on the trip we went just before this one, it took them almost the entire trip to finally get to that place, because they were both like, we said 9 o'clock and it's 10 o'clock and we're not getting ready to go. Like, I know. That's not the point. The point is we're going to go. Like, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you adapted relatively quickly as far as new people go to that whole scheduled out-the-window shift, which is just fun.
I think, like, just having those meetings beforehand made such a difference. Like, even if you weren't, like, learning everything you needed to know, just having people talk about their trip and, like, just reminding, like, it's that constant reminder that, like, no, you're not going to know everything right before you go, but you'll get it. You'll, like, understand. And it's not, like, as daunting as you think it is.
It isn't. And, you know, there's this whole sense of you just can't know everything, but if you can just believe me that it is strangely different than anything you've ever encountered.
Yeah.
Like, if you can just believe that, and then you get there and you go, oh my gosh, it is really that different. Your shift will be different. You know, that transition will be a little bit easier for you into this new culture. Can you go, oh, they did say it was going to be crazy different, so maybe this is real.
Yeah.
It really is this crazy. Yeah.
That's, like, one thing. And, like, coming back to, I'm like, when people ask about the trip, I'm like, and I explain everything, I'm like, oh my gosh, it was, like, a great experience. And people will be like, eh, I don't really, like, have a desire to go overseas or anything. I'm like, you just have, like, you had to go. Like, it's not as daunting, as scary as you think it is. Like, you'll go over and you'll understand why, like, you'll understand why people keep going over.
It's so hard to impress it on people.
Oh, yeah.
It's so hard to be like, no, you don't understand. Like, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's life-changing. And people are like, eh, I don't know if a life can really be changed in a week. Totally can.
Yeah.
Totally can be changed in one experience over a week.
I remember getting a letter, like, right before my trip, and someone was like, you're or like the end of the letter was something about like, you'll leave your heart and a piece of your heart in Africa. Or she was like, that's what everyone says. And I was like, oh, whatever. Like, I'll come back. Not that change. And then I like get there and I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely, yeah. definitely true.
I know. So I've said this in almost every interview now is that's one of the things that burdens me is I realize like this is a huge life-changing thing to somebody. And I always just think to myself, who am I to decide that I've got the right to decide that, yeah, Emily Mickelson, I'm going to just smash her heart in Africa and change her for the rest of her life. I totally have that. I can do that. No problem. But yeah. It's never been for the worse. It's only ever mm-hmm. been for the better. Nobody's come back and said, I'm now a worse person.
Yeah.
So yeah. That's good. How do you think you've changed?
I think a big thing is like understanding, well, just like seeing all the stuff that needs done back here too. Like every little mission opportunity, I'm like, I want to do that. I want to go down to Texas. I want to go next year to Africa. Like, I want to do all this stuff and like continue the mission here. Like, yeah. It doesn't just stop in Africa. Like, I was like, I want to continue it. And like, whether I'm here or there and just seeing like all those ways to help. And I'm like, I want to do it. Like, I want to volunteer to go do that.
And that's part of this whole concept of how we do stuff at Living Faith too, is there's this idea that you do, you know, local stuff, then regional stuff, then national stuff, and then you build up to international stuff. Mm-hmm. And several years ago, I had this idea, and like, I wonder if you started at the end, if it would change the beginning. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Oh yeah.
So like you take people all the way to the ends of the earth, and you start there, and people come back and go, why are we sitting around not doing anything in our own backyard? Let's mm-hmm. get to work.
Yeah.
So it's a bit counterintuitive, but
yeah.
it makes sense now. Uh-huh. and I see the fruit of it around yeah. the church.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something you'll find is that you sort of lose a bit of inhibition about being somebody to sign up to do something. Because you're like, oh my gosh, I can go to Africa. Surely I can go to Des Moines.
Mm-hmm.
It's right over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any of those conversations you've had since coming back, have you had any like frustrations with people to try and help them understand?
I haven't had those like big ones like Joanne talks about, like where you're just like, oh my gosh, like I wish you could just get them to understand.
Yeah.
I think there's definitely been those people where they're like, eh, I don't really have any desire to do that. And I just want to be like, well, maybe if you went, you'd understand and then you'd have that desire. But there haven't really been those conversations that have stood out that much, but I think I've also, so I've talked a lot with people from our Bible study back in Ames, but a lot of them also went on trips this summer. So we kind of relate and understand kind of where everyone's been. And so I think that's probably like a big reason why we haven't had those like really like frustrating conversations, because a lot of them know,
yeah,
like what's going on and like understand,
yeah,
that.
What you might bump into is the difference between a lot of mission trips that people do that are kind of like a gap year service project, and, mm-hmm. and I don't want to dog on those, but you did something very different,
yeah,
where you never swung a hammer, but you every day were a part of bringing hope and joy and the gospel of Jesus Christ to people's lives, which for some reason in our culture we tend to devalue those things as well. If you can't live in the gospel of Jesus, you know, you can't eat it for dinner, so it's mm-hmm. not as important as feeding.
Yeah.
And I think we find the opposite true there. I think we find that what people need there is the hope of Jesus.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And that's like one thing, like going into the trip, I was like, we're going to be the ones bringing it to them, and like they're going to be out in the middle of nowhere and they've never heard it before. And then you get there and you're like, that is not the way it was whatsoever. I was like, I felt like they had more like, I don't even know how to explain it, but like they had more faith and like trust, and like, I don't know. Like, it's easy, I think, for us to trust in God sometimes, just because like it's not always that difficult. And I'm like, to have them trust, I'm like, that is like, at times it felt like I was like, that's crazy. But then like taking a step back, you're like, it's not that crazy.
No. Yeah, it's when it's all you have left, it's mm-hmm. the only thing to that you can even observe.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for all of us here to put a little bit of our trust in our bank account or our mm-hmm. abilities or something like that. But when everything is gone and all you have left is Jesus, it's the only thing you see when you talk to these people.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty common. That people are surprised by that. And I always say, you know what? No matter how much you give, you're going to get more in return.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weird economy of the gospel. It works in reverse.
Yeah.
You always gain more than you give. That just seems odd.
Yeah.
But it sounds like something Jesus once said. It's better to give than to receive. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hard to say. So was there anything on the trip that was truly hard to hear or hard to experience?
I think there was like this reoccurring kind of theme that I noticed of like so many people, like it kind of stood out to me. There were a lot of people my age that they had like this desire to come over to the U.S. and have opportunities and to not just be able to like hand it to them and be like, come back with me. Like I want to support you and like I want you to have these opportunities. Like that was really difficult for me to not just like want to take them back. And like, cause I'm like, we have so many opportunities here. Like, I'm like, even if it's expensive, you can do pretty much anything that you want. And it's like, it's not that way all the time over there. But then like also realizing that like, that's my mindset is to like, you need this and this to feel fulfilled. Like you need these opportunities and that's not always the case. But yeah, that was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. The lack of options that they have is profound.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. We even miss that. It's hard for us to even acknowledge that each and every day I make 30 choices about what I'm going to do before breakfast.
Yeah.
And there are none up. You wake up and then you do the only thing that you have to do is wake up, get dressed, look for food.
Yeah. And then I know there was someone kind of along those same lines, and I don't remember which camp we were in, but they were talking about how back in her home country, she worked and, like, she had all these opportunities, and then here she just felt so, like stagnant. Like, you can't do anything. Like, you're just stuck. And like to hear that was kind of hard to hear too. Cause I'm like, I can't imagine you wake up and you're doing the same thing over and over again. And when you were used to being able to like provide for your family and work, and then you don't have that option anymore. Like for me, that would just wreck me.
Yeah.
And I could tell that that was hard for her too. So like to hear that you just wish you could give them those opportunities again, but
yeah, these are not lazy people.
No,
they are.
No.
They would love to get to work, to get to plant, to mm-hmm. harvest. But it's just there. I mean, there's nothing to do.
Yeah,
it's hard for. I think I'm trying to put myself in the position of somebody who's not been on this trip, and I would think to myself, well, there's got to be something. You find it. You force it.
Yeah.
You go and you make something happen. There's nothing. There's literally, I would stand in the middle of one of these compounds, these family compounds, and go, well, they have swept the dirt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've done everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing left to do. You see them out with brooms sweeping the top layer of dust off, so it's just hard dirt, so it's, you know, a little bit less dirty. Mm-hmm. It's very, very clean and very tidy.
Yeah.
That also is amazing to me.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, there's nothing left to do.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So what was one thing that stood out as a story of like encouragement or joy or something that you just felt was awesome or amazing?
It's $1 million question from this. I think one thing that was, I'm trying to think of encouraging is the right word. But when we were in, I want to say it was the Calibe refugee camp. I think it was that one, because that was the newer one where they don't have, like, the walls on their homes yet. They just have the, like, plastic sheets around their house.
Yep.
And they were talking about how when they go to church, there's that possibility of someone just coming up and, like, basically cutting that sheet and going to their house and taking everything. And to know that, like, they take that risk in order to go to church, in order to praise God and to be in community with other believers. And, I mean, you kind of risk everything that you have to go do this. And that was kind of eye-opening because I'm like, sometimes I don't even – sometimes it's, like, painful to, like, give up my time for this. But I'm like, I'm not losing anything or have the chance of losing anything like they do. And, like, you just really see the importance of their faith when, like, you see how much they can lose because of it. But it doesn't matter. And that's – and, like, even, like – when we had those conversations about, like, wishing we brought food over, wishing we brought something material over because they're hungry. And I mean, it took me until, like, a couple weeks after I got back to realize, like, it finally hit me that it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But that was, yeah, there were those days where I was like, ah, it just feels like what we're doing is empty because I'm not feeding them. I'm not putting clothes on their back. But then, yeah, like a couple weeks later, you realize that that's not important.
Isn't it hard to get your head around? Like,
oh, yeah.
There's people who are starving, and feeding them isn't the most important thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, really? And it's like, you come to that realization that even if you feed them, it's never going to last. It's going to run out.
In minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's going to cause issues and, like, tensions.
Yeah.
If you're only feeding one group. But, yeah, it's never going to – I mean, we don't even have enough money to feed them for the rest of their lives. So, yeah, to – yeah.
We kind of did that math of, like, if every family at Living Faith – we're just kind of ballparking numbers. If every family dedicated something like $20,000 a year and got – all just translated that into food for people in Kakuma, we figured we could feed maybe half of the camp for 6 months or the entire camp for like 2 months.
Yeah.
And then they're hungry.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's insane.
I know.
The size of the problem. And it's like just astronomical. But like the resolution to that in your head, the only place you can come to it is in Jesus' words. I'm convinced of this. When he speaks those words, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will not hunger and not thirst.
Yeah.
And you go, so that's – Jesus was speaking it to people like in Kakuma who were those people who were hungry all the time.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden those words make so much more sense.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I get it because he fed 5,000 – he pulled off that Jesus magic trick, you know, it was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And like, well, why didn't he just stay there and do it every day the rest of his life? Okay, it was only 5,000, first off, and let's say he does feed the entire region, hundreds of thousands of people, until he dies. And then what?
Yeah.
Like, it's still a temporary solution to a permanent problem.
Yeah.
So the only solution would be a permanent solution, and the only permanent solution is one that extends past death.
Yep.
You know, like this thing, the cross, the tomb, Easter.
Yeah.
That stuff we talk about in church and the things that we actually went to share and
encourage
people with. So you go, oh, wow, it really does make that much of a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It takes you going over there and like seeing it all and experiencing it to get it.
Yeah. It really does. There's no substitute. You can read it, you can understand it, you can intellectually grasp it, but there's something different about the sight, the sound, the smell, just the feeling of poverty, because we don't have poverty in the U.S. There's, I was just talking to somebody, in the last like 18 months, 2 years, there's been 2 deaths to malnutrition in the Des Moines area. And that's like, it's startling. But in those 2 deaths, both of them were cases where food was available and it was intentional neglect on the parts of adults. Yeah. And you go, it's not because there wasn't food. It's because those people were bad people.
Yeah.
Where we were, like, there wasn't food.
Yeah. There wasn't even, like, an option for food. Like, you can't grow your food and you just,
That's real poverty. When the food won't grow.
Yeah.
And it just isn't there and you have nowhere to go. No means to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Oof. So there's people right now listening who are like, wow, this young lady went and she's amazing. She's so strong in her faith. She is a model of what every young Christian woman should be like. But, you know, that's because she's special and she's not like me. I couldn't go. What would you say to that person?
That's definitely not true. I think
you're special.
I think this isn't a trip for, like, I don't think anyone's ever going to be perfectly ready for this trip or, like, have the, like, exact faith you need for this trip. Like, it's not, like, there's not qualifications that you have to match for this trip. I think God will use you no matter what your talents are and, like, I think that's a big thing, is like you can be used no matter like what's going on, like how strong your faith is. And so you gotta say that you have to be special or be perfect in order to go and change people's lives. I don't think that's not true.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of this like sort of this inward impulse to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. And there's no qualifications. I think there's a few limitations.
Yeah.
I can think of people who I think, oh, you know, I don't, they're not jumping up and down and asking me if they want to go.
But that's
hard. Physically, it's hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'd hate to take somebody in their 80s on a trip like this. Can you imagine? Grandma or grandpa on one of these trips? Like, geez, I'd feel terrible just how much suffering physically, because the accommodations were maybe less than 5-star. How did you feel about that, by the way? Was that just like...
I think I got lucky on our, like, because I did not have any big bugs or big, like, insects that I saw. Like, big lizards or anything. But I think sometimes I had to take a step back and realize that, like, we have running water most of the time. We have like a bed, and then you compare it to the people that we've been with all day, and that's way more than they have. I mean, like when you come from home and stay there, you're like, this is not what I was expecting. But when you go the other way, so like when we were there all week and then we went to St. Teresa's, and like I was like, this is gorgeous, but like if we had come from home and stayed there, I probably still would have been like,
Yeah, wasn't that just a beautiful, like a gem in the middle? You're like, you got there and opened the doors, and you know, so gorgeous. And it really is, you know, a beautiful place.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, those accommodations are good ish,
yeah.
But coming from where we had been staying in the refugee camp. It was an oasis, like a mirage in the desert.
Yeah.
Do you know that Joni and I had air conditioning?
I knew some people did. Which it wasn't. That night wasn't too hot.
It wasn't, but my room was
too.
Yeah, my room was frosty. It was nice. I was like, oh, so nice.
I was like, if I can have moving air, I think I could have opened my windows and that would help, but I think I left them closed, but
yeah. You know, for me, the whole thing, first time I went, it was like, we're going to stay at a hotel. And I was like, sweet. I'm thinking, you know, probably not the best hotel, like maybe like a Motel 6. Yeah. And I got there and I was like, goo! But it's because I went from expecting a hotel and having this thing that is very different. Then I just sort of reoriented myself because I used to go camping growing up all the time. And it was like, it's just camping. You know, I mean, that's it. You don't expect to get a shower when you're camping. You don't expect, like, you want to have a flat place to sleep on and not get rained on. Like, those are the goals of camping. And then it's like, yeah, this is just camping. You call it a hotel.
Yeah.
But this is definitely camping.
I was definitely expecting, like, a lower-end hotel, like, U.S. hotel. And then we're there. It's like, this is not what I was expecting, but...
Oh, if that place existed in the U.S., SWAT teams would descend on it and arrest people who owned it. Like, it was, that was a crime scene. It was so,
there's a lot of stuff where I was like, this definitely would not fly back at
home. This is not code. This is definitely not code. Like, OSHA would be screaming. This is
like
not.
Our security in the airports. It's like,
yeah.
Glad nothing bad happened.
One of my favorite parts was as all of our bags are going through in the Turkana airport, our bags are going through the scanner and the place where the person sits to look at the screen is empty. It's not like the person wasn't watching. There wasn't a person there watching.
Yeah.
So like they were just putting bags through a scanner. You know, it's not going to like stop the line for you or flag things. It requires somebody watching that screen, but whatever. Not a problem. That was great.
I'd like walk through the scanners and something go off and just go through.
Oh yeah. Oh, you're with him? That was great too. And it was like, are you guys to Joni and I, are you guys married? Yeah. Oh, okay. Just go ahead. Yeah. I'm like, so that means I'm not a terrorist because I'm married to her? And then they were like, are you with her? Yeah. Okay. You guys can just go. And like Morgan was one of our kids, you know? Oh, you're fine. I'm like, that's not security. Like, just because one of us doesn't have a bomb, you're like, yeah, obviously none of them do. I mean, they're a family. They're married.
Yeah.
And with no evidence, by the way. And they didn't check passports to see if we're married. They just kind of, oh, yeah, you guys are together. Yeah. That's fine. Nobody would ever lie about that.
And I was like, are there people that look like us that aren't a threat over there? Or is it just always that lax on their
I have a theory security? That it's kind of wound up in their culture of respect and just that whole idea that you would never want to offend somebody or so it's hard for them to be confrontational to push and say, no, we're going through your bag. I don't care if you're married to this person. I don't care if that's your kid. I don't care if they're a 12-year-old. I don't care if that's an 80-year-old. We're going through your stuff. Like, that would be so offensive that, and this is the only reason why there's not a direct flight from the U.S. to Kenya and back is because of Kenya's inability to kind of pull that mindset together of culture and custom out the window, security is security.
Yeah.
That's trippy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to go back is what you're saying.
Oh, definitely. I'd go back in a heartbeat. The travel was... a little bit rough, but once you get past that, and it's like the travel and like the heat and stuff like that. Like I look back now, I'm like, oh, it wasn't that bad. In the moment, I was like, just get me off these flights. I just want to be outside. But yeah, looking back, you're like, ah, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I kind of stopped even experiencing the travel. Like obviously I take Ambien like it's candy. But, I mean, it's just, in my opinion, it's for the next 20 hours, I'm just going to hunker down and pass time. I'm just 20 hours of passing time and getting from point A to point B, and then things start.
Yeah.
And, you know, like with the heat, my classic, this is how I feel. And I will feel this way until I feel something else. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me anymore. But yeah, it really is. I think that is oftentimes the toughest part is, especially when you're leaving. The travel on the way back seems so much harder to me.
Yeah.
Because it's just a drag.
I think having that midnight flight made like the world's difference, though. Because like when we left at the U.S. at 7 p.m., I was still like I'd like flying before that. So I was like, oh, yay, we're like... it's going to be a fun adventure. Flight. I was like, yeah. And then, like, you're not tired, but I think I was falling asleep in the airport before we took off. So I kind of took up a lot of time just being able to sleep. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you'd go back in a heartbeat. What would you long for the most going back? Like what is it that's drawing you to go back?
I think, and like I kind of came to terms with the fact that like we might not necessarily go back to the same place and see the same people, but I think it's the culture and like the people just in general, like whether it's the same exact people or different people just wanting to go see them again. And I think it goes back to the fact that like you think you're going to change their lives, but they change you. And like you just continue to want that and continue to want to see them and build those relationships with them.
Yeah. Yeah. And you do have this sense of you've been changed and good mm-hmm. things happened to you, but it's really clear to me, and I think to everybody who went, that we did make a difference.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
Isn't that weird and kind of awesome?
Yeah. I think I felt that every time someone would be like, "We're so glad you're here." I'm like, that's not, like people will be like, "Oh, I'm glad to see you." But it's never like, "We are so unbelievably thankful that you are here to see us. Like just to listen to us and hear us." Like they were so grateful for that. And that was just, yeah, it was kind of mind blowing. I'm like, see me, like what about me is so like great. But that was just huge for them.
Well, you are a bearer of the Spirit. You bring Jesus with you. Yeah. I mean, that's, I always think when somebody swings by my house, I am, you know, anywhere from excited to see them, happy to see mm-hmm. them, okay, kind of annoyed, you know, yeah. like if I'm in the middle of something, I'm like, "Hey, good to see ya." Yeah. Thing is, like, yeah, some things going yeah. on. But it's a whole different story when it is a genuine, "I am so glad to see mm-hmm. you." It's not just the words. There is just this vibe to it where you're like, "Wow, my showing up is making an actual difference."
Yeah.
My mentor in the faith, this guy, Carl, God bless him. He's taught me more than I can even recall and write down. But he's got this phrase that is supremely annoying because it's nerdy and it's awful. But the phrase is, "Presence is systemically determinative." Isn't that an awful way to say anything? What that means is just your presence changes things. Mm-hmm. And you feel like, you know, when grandma or grandpa walks in the room, just that they're there makes all the difference. Yeah. If you don't get a lot of chance to talk to them, just their presence yep. changes the system. That's what that means.
Yeah.
And that's nice. And it's that on steroids when you show up in Kenya. It's yeah. that times a million. And you go, "Oh my gosh, just being here is actually changing this person's life and making mm-hmm. a huge difference."
Yeah.
It's a humbling and honoring experience all at the same time.
Yeah.
So what do you want to tell the people of Living Faith who are listening to this right now, or anybody across the country?
Say if you have an opportunity to do something like this, do it. I mean, I think you might have this little thought and you're like, "Ah, just push it away." But like, if you feel that, you need to like follow it. And there's a reason that you have a desire to go, whether you think that you are able to, or like think that you have the qualifications or not. I think there's a reason that God put that opportunity in front of you.
"Oh, but I'm busy. Emily, you don't know I'm busy."
I think it takes you going to Africa to realize how unimportant being busy or having stuff going on is. Like, you can take a break.
Right? The world isn't going to end if you stop yeah. participating in it for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, true story. Awesome. Well, that's 47 minutes, that quick. Easy, right?
Yeah.
Anything else you want to share, last things?
Sure, I'll think of something after.
Yeah, right, after when it's all said out. And done. I know. Yeah. This has been really cool. And how cool is it that you and your big sister had a chance to kind of do this at similar times?
Mm-hmm.
How have those conversations been? When you compare notes, two very different trips. Yeah. Hers was much longer and very different in scope to Czech Republic.
Is that where Romania is?
Yes, Romania is not Czech Republic, but it's
okay.
They're all the same in that Eastern Bloc.
Yeah, it was definitely different. She was doing a lot more like childcare. I think her intentions were to do a lot more like women's ministry, which that wasn't totally what she was put into. But I think she also kind of understood like once she got in the routine that that's not necessarily where they needed her or where maybe God needed her to be. I think she needed to be with those kids. I mean, I hear the stories of the kids and I think there's someone about her age that I think there was a reason that she was with them.
Yeah.
Because they, I mean, it's a lot of kids who have been, like, the intention of this place is to keep the families and the moms and the kids together, but there's been some where the moms just leave.
Yeah.
So they need a figure that's going to be there to support them for kind of the long term. And I think she kind of feels that, like, ache to go back as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, I listening to her a little bit reminds me what Felicitas and I were talking just yesterday about. She went on the very first trip Living Faith went on, and she goes, "This one is, I mean, it's so much better."
Yeah,
and I go, "Well, you, the thing about this is you learn a little bit every time, and you stay consistent with one sort of focus, and you just get better."
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was listening to your sister talk, I thought I just keep thinking she's young and in a, I mean, obviously you're younger, but the leader, she's like part of the leadership in all of this.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's, it just takes years to refine it, to get to a point where you know, you have expectations, right? We have these meetings to prepare you guys to go, but we couldn't do that the first time we went because we'd never been there before. Yeah. So it takes, so, you know, a word of encouragement to her is just keep at it and learn a little bit every time and don't get discouraged if your expectations weren't met. Because we've built that into our training. Yeah. Throw away your expectations and look for what the Spirit does.
Yeah.
And it gets better every time you learn something. And that's what's important is that the mission continues to get refined and better throughout time.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see what you guys do.
Me too.
Because this is a pretty cool family. You think Haley's going to be?
I think she's made some comments about, like, can I go next year?
Cool.
I think my dad, I don't think it'd take very much to push him
to go. I think your dad would go in a heartbeat.
I think he was like, okay, like, even before I left, he's like, okay, you tell me how it is, and then I'll go next, or, like, I'll probably go next year. And I was like,
yeah.
You already know that you want to go.
yeah. What about mom?
It's kind of back to that. There's always that one. It's like the one spouse wants to go and the other one's like,
I know, no,
I'm content.
I think there's something to that. And I think that's actually a really, it's consistent.
Uh-huh.
Everybody on our team is that way.
Yeah.
And I think that that's almost an important dynamic is to have somebody grounded and rooted so that the other part of the marriage can go and do something like this.
Yeah.
And it blesses the whole marriage.
Yeah.
I got to sit around and think about that more and explore that dynamic. Yeah. And because it is, it's consistent. My wife doesn't need to go again. I mean, she would, but she's like, okay, that was amazing and life changing. Mm-hmm. And God bless you next year.
Yeah. And it's not like they're like, wow, I wish I could have gone this time. They're just, it's fine. It's okay.
It's such a cool, there's not like this locked, and it's with every spouse on the team. Uh-huh. There's no conflict. There's no, you know, I wish you wouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
Or animosity that you went and I didn't.
Yeah.
It's just like, it seems in every one of those marriages, it seems like it's clear, oh, you're the one who goes, and I'm the one who stays.
Yeah.
And this works in such a cool dynamic. And I do need to spend more time thinking about that and working that into training somewhere or just communication, because I don't want people to think that, well, if my wife or my husband isn't all in with me, then maybe I shouldn't go.
Yeah.
I think the opposite is true. I think that you're going to find that you have a feeling that you need to go, and your spouse is likely to say, I don't need to go. Mm-hmm. And that's perfect.
Yeah.
It's weird.
It is weird.
God's kingdom is so surprising, intriguing, interesting, and mm-hmm. oftentimes bonkers.
Yeah.
I dig it.
Excited to see who goes next year and
right?
what we do next year. I don't know how it has been in the past, but like, man, it's just, I'm like, feels like a family now.
Right?
Like when Julie's like, I miss you guys. I'm like, oh my gosh, I was hoping someone would like, I want to see you guys.
I do too. I didn't want to say anything. I do too. Yeah. Well, and now you're a veteran.
Ah.
So you're changing gears now. So, that's a big deal because we always try and balance, always good to have new people and continue to spread the influence,
mm-hmm.
but you need somebody because even though, Julie would tell you she didn't know what she was doing ever, but you knew Julie had been there before.
Yeah.
And there's just comfort for a new person to mm-hmm. say, you've been here before. This is not crazy.
Yeah.
Going to be okay.
That was like so nice about going with our church and like we have like a ton of moms and a ton of dads. And, like if I need something, if I'm just like nervous about something, you can talk to them and it's not weird. Not with random people who have no idea who they are. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is. It has really, I think, been one of the driving factors of shaping the culture and the personality of Living Faith.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is, I wouldn't call it like one of the crowning jewels because that's just not the right term. It's not the right dynamic, but it's just kind of like this. It's the color that fills in the lines.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. So you're switching now. You're over to veteran. That means if you're looking to go back, you're likely to go back.
Yeah.
And it just means that now everything changes.
Yeah.
That you are going to be the one where some young person is going to look at you and go, Emily, you've been here before.
Yeah.
It's okay as long as... And you're going to be expected to know mm-hmm. things and to have answers. Yeah. And
I feel like I'm a little bit more comfortable in that role, like as a... I do like a peer mentor thing and I'm like, I kind of like the role of like feeling it, like knowing what's going on and like,
yeah.
And it's kind of nice to like just know that like if someone's not comfortable or not like they just don't feel great about it, I'm like, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
I just like to have that like calm sense, like I've been here. It's going to be fine.
Yeah. You don't actually have to have the answer. Just be like, I've done this before.
Yeah.
And it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Haley's got to get a little bit older before she's eligible. But how much fun would this be if we get like most of the Mickelson family in Africa?
I wonder if that would push my mom to go, or she'd be like, "Nope, still okay."
Yeah, and again, that I think is an interesting dynamic to figure out. If there's always somebody in the family that's that bedrock grounded. Mm-hmm. You go out and I really start to wonder if there isn't some sort of like a required balance because oftentimes people come back and they're like, that's it, packing up, moving to Kenya.
Yeah.
Like, and you need somebody to kind of grab hold of you and say, slow down.
Yeah.
We need to eat dinner tonight. And tomorrow you have to go to work or mm-hmm. you have to go to school.
Yeah.
And just there needs to be that voice where if everybody was like, you could really shake up a family union and be like, mm-hmm. yeah, let's do it. Quit school. Quit your job. Whoa, slow down, cowboy.
Maybe it's a good thing that I didn't go. Otherwise, I would have quit school.
I know, right?
I wouldn't have gotten back for junior year.
Yeah, that would have gone over well with mom and dad, I bet.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Emily Mickelson.
There you have it. Another life changed. Another awesome story about the mission to Kakuma in Kenya. Hope you enjoyed it. Or Kakuma. We still really don't know how to pronounce that. So hope you guys enjoyed that. I sure enjoy talking to Emily. I like talking to her anytime. She goes deep. A lot to that young woman. Hope you enjoyed it. Like I said, there will be some more throughout the week. So pay close attention. They're coming your way. Peace out.